Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, everybody. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Hello, yes. Welcome back, Anila.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Yes, it's cold and crisp. That's our weather report. No rain. It's not raining yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, well, there's
don't
a big,
tempt fate, Annie.
Well, there's a big rally today. There's a big public housing rally today, starting at the State Library and making its way up to Atherton Gardens for a bit of a festival. It starts at 11 a.m. and we're going to be talking to somebody a little bit about that later on in the program. There's other things going on as well. If you can't get down to the public housing rally.
Yeah, later today at midday we kick off. We've got a event, Philef's got an event at Merlinston Progress Hall, 1 Novian Court, Faulkner or Coburg
North? No,
Coburg North.
I read the sign.
Yeah. It's the celebration of the founding of the Republic of Italy. We're doing a bit of a different to the institutional sort of thing. We're celebrating what constitutional values mean and how they were... How they were won and what that means in the Australian context as well as migrants.
Yeah, that sounds like a good thing to do. So two possibilities for the day. There's many things going on in Melbourne at the same time, but if you're a political operator, these are the two places to be at the time. A bit of headlines.
It's been a busy week.
Very busy week. We've only got a little bit of time to talk about headlines, but there was an interesting thing that came out of APAN, a bit of positive. Well, let's start with a positive rather than a negative. They said that Sydney's Vivid Festival dropped Airbnb as an official sponsor following a campaign by Stop the War last year, which resulted in 24 artists and writers withdrawing from the festival, so BDS does work.
And now to the negative. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu this week has said that he has directed the Israeli military to take more territory in Gaza by increasing its control from 60% of the territory to 70% of the territory in a clear violation of the US-backed ceasefire deal signed in October 2025.
The UTSET.
Yes.
UTSET's a clear ceasefire deal.
Netanyahu made the remarks during a conference at the Ayn Pratt Leadership Academy in a Jewish settlement in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, and an audience member at the event shouted out that Israel should take, quote, 100% of Gaza. Netanyahu didn't dispute the idea that taking over the entire Palestinian territory was the ultimate end goal, and replied by saying, quote, we're going in order. First 70%, we'll start at that. So very ominous.
I had one from human rights groups who are warning that Australia could become a safe haven for alleged war criminals unless authorities act now. Amnesty International Australia, the APAN and the Australian Muslim Advocacy Network have urged the AFP, the Australian Federal Police, and the Attorney General to investigate Australian-Israeli dual nationals who may have taken part in hostilities in Gaza. The organisations filed a submission this week calling for probes into any Australians alleged to have committed war crimes, crimes against humanity or participated in genocide, saying perpetrators must be held accountable. Amnesty's Mohamed Douar said that the international rules-based order must be upheld and the impunity must come to an end. While Israel's military does not publish numbers of foreign or dual nationals in its rank, media reports have documented Australians travelling to join the IDF after October 7th. Other countries, including Belgium, Brazil, Canada, France, and Sri Lanka, have opened investigations into allegations against their citizens or visiting soldiers, but the groups say Australia has so far allowed IDF personnel to enter and leave unchecked.
Interestingly enough, the just on an aside, this going away from Australia, but Israel's connection to America, which is similar to the kind of arrangements that we've got here with Israel. Ex-Trump campaign chief funneled millions of Israeli government money to his longtime allies company, a company run by former Trump campaign manager, we'll repeat that, former Trump campaign manager Brad Pascal, hired by the Israeli government to push pro-Israel views on a major conservative media network, has directed $13 million from Israel to several Republican digital strategy firms and allies, according to a previously unreported document filed under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. This is from Intercept. Israel initially directly hired Pascal's firm Clock Tower X last September with a contract worth $6 million. The new filing reveals that this firm has received over $15 million from Havas Media Network, an international media company, on behalf of the Israeli state. One of the largest recipients of the Israeli funds coming in through Pascal's contract is a firm called Portman Road Strategies, which is run by longtime GOP strategist Mike Shields, according to Vigidian State Records. Shields' firm received just under $5 million from Pascal as part of the contract in exchange for media placement, consulting, polling, and advertising work. The Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's government has ramped up spending on influence operations. Earlier this year, Israel more than quadrupled its public diplomacy budget from $150 million to in 2025 to $750 million in 2026. The bit that's interesting, and particularly interesting, is that $6 million of the Israeli funds are going to Sparkfire Technologies, an AI chatbot company. Sparkfire's role was previously unknown, but it was related to a campaign of text messages that was first reported by responsible statecraft under the contract. Pascal's firm's reach outs to Americans under the auspices of proposed peace organizations. They personalized their messages. The AI then performs an analysis of the conversation, with Sparkfire storing the data and using it to target messages to the recipients. Pot texts sent by Sparkfire can appear compassionate, understanding, and referential, based on screenshots shared with the Intercept and responsible statecraft. Sparkfire claims these types of conversations are highly effective. The company boasts its messaging had a 45% conversion rate, suggesting almost half of the recipients were persuaded by the AI-powered conversation. Interestingly enough, the reason for their targeting the conservative elements of youth in Republican conservatives, who 59% are showing by polling by the Pew surveyors that poll that they're anti-Israel, like 59%. So they're trying to shift that block. And the reason why I bring it up is because you may have noticed that GetUp put out a warning that right-wing operatives have just registered a fake Victorian party called Refugees Are Welcome Here. It's named to look progressive, but it's actually a vote laundering operation designed to send more votes to one nation. And under Victoria's group voting ticket system, it's perfectly legal. There are four fake parties. Refugees are welcome here. Muslim Votes Matter, Free Palestine and Save the Environment. They're all fronts and they're all aimed to put preferences through to one nation. So it's the same psychology, that's my point.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's Avi Yemini and all them are doing it.
Yeah.
And Monica Smith from
it's called
the...
called Creepy?
Yeah. The remnants of the anti-lockdown movement. So they're clawing back at their relevance.
You know, I think I'd go further than Creepy and call it Slimy.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I'm reading a Henry James book at the moment, which seems like a left-field thing to say, but there was it's an old, you know, from 1904. It actually said this thing that I thought was really interesting. It said that immorality is actually stupidity. Isn't that interesting?
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me it seems like these groups are probably a little bit more nefarious than just being ignorant, stupid people. but also the other thing that I think is worth picking up for this week's news, Guatemala has agreed to carry out joint strikes with the US military on its territory to target drug trafficking groups in a continued escalation of US involvement in Latin America. Guatemala has become the second country in the region to allow the US military to take part in its war on drugs after Ecuador, where US military personnel are advising and assisting Ecuadorian troops. The Times previously reported that one of the first operations involving bombings that the US and Ecuador claimed was a drug camp actually turned out to be a dairy farm.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's just it's a publicity methodology or slogan that just keeps giving, doesn't it? The war on drugs.
Mm. And I just recall the Ecuadorian comrade that spoke at the Hands Off Venezuela rally that said that a few members of the cabinet are actually Zionists.
Yeah, they're dual citizens. Bizarre, absolutely bizarre. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie Tobiah and Anila.
He ain't your prophet, only preaches for profits, gives you the rope to sell you a coffin. That man is godless, stuff in his pockets, but all he can spare is a life isn't fair when the poor man is starving. Damn, that man is heartless.
No king, no god, just flesh and blood. Down here there's laws and no man's above. No king, no god, not one of us. You're all alone when the crown comes off. When your kingdom's gone alone, watch it fall.
Your prophet. Take one look in his closet, and his skeleton scattered all over the floor like a Jackson Pollock. Friends with the devil, you know, the devil you don't is on his payroll. And all of his sadistic sycophants, ignorant hypocrites, mumbling gibberish like it's only free speech if it's bigoted. Mix the condescension with some ignorance. Thoughts and prayers for the innocent, that's the best that you're gonna get.
No king, no god.
About optics, spinning his lies like a bobbit, twist it and pull it and everyone's bought it, stacking paper in his wallet, the most prolific of con men, who gave the convict a convent, put humanity in hospice, sold our futures for profit.
No king, no god, just flesh and blood. Down here there's laws and no man's above. No king, no god, not one of us. You're all alone when the crown comes off. That man is heartless. That man
3CR's annual Radiothon fundraiser is almost here.
This June we'll be asking for your donations to support 3CR.
Your donation during Radiothon keeps the station radical and enables us to give voice to our community for another year.
All donations over $2 are tax deductible.
3CR Radiothon is coming. Show your support by donating this June.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Yeah, back with Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got James on the line, who's part of the organising team for the Freedom Fritilla. G'day, James. How are you?
Yeah, good morning to you. Thanks for having us on the radio.
Yeah, no, it's good to talk to you. Can you give us some idea about, you know, the effort that was made to get people on the water?
Yeah, well, I'm part of the organising group for Free Gaza Australia, which is part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. We've been trying since 2011 to try and break Israel's illegal blockade of Gaza. So over the years, we've recruited and collected participants from across this continent to take part, to travel on boat, to try and travel across the Mediterranean and meet with our Palestinian siblings and to challenge the blockade that's been going there. And over the years, it's escalated, intensified. The number of people who've heard about the blockade, and they've gone, I need to step up and do something. I have the ability to. And people are doing work on the land, in the air. We do work on the water. And so our work is to challenge that blockade on the Mediterranean Sea, the only port that's close in the Mediterranean Sea. And in the last couple of years, with the increasing genocide that people would have seen live streamed on their phones, we've obviously wanted to intensify our actions on the water. And so many, many more people have wanted to get involved. And most recently, we've just completed a particular mission. But I could talk about many of the missions before, this year, last year, and over the last, say, 15 years that we've been sailing. And before that, the Free Gaza movement tried to break the blockade. And in all these stages, the Israelis have kept attacking people in international waters. And it's what they do to the Palestinians. They attack them just off the coast where they want to live, sustain their lifestyle with fishing, enjoying the waters and have freedom of movement. And all we do is try and do what Palestinians want to do, be able to move freely and connect with peoples around the world.
It's an extremely effective method of bringing to people's attention what's actually going on. Like you said, 15 years is a long time, and each time the Israelis have been stepping up their level of violence. In fact, people have been killed, haven't they?
Yeah, back in May 2010, 31st of May, aboard the Mavi Marmara, the documentary called The Truth Lost at Sea, which recounts the tales people managed to smuggle out some footage from as they were being attacked. But the Israelis attacked one large ship called the Mavi Marmara and several other boats that were accompanying it. And they rappelled down from the helicopters and shot people. And they took over the ship. And 10 people were killed by the Israelis that day. The Israelis hated this international solidarity. And the Palestinian people in the Port of Gaza, they commemorate the people who attempt to break the blockade, and they erected a monument in the port of Gaza to the people there, which, of course, the Israelis blew up.
Yeah, it's obscene, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And how do you place the government's response, the Australian government's response to this latest wave of activists going over?
Yeah. Well, in the past, the Australian government's often made public and also private approaches about, Australians shouldn't do this because this is a this and this is a that zone, and you do so at your own risk, and here's a travel advisory here. So they're often putting these sort of words out. But we always push back and say, well, we actually don't want to be going there. The problem is that you haven't acted. It's a failure of international law, a failure of the Australian government to end this illegal blockade. But while the government keeps failing, and as we say, people keep sailing. And so they're not going to stop us from sailing. We'll keep doing that. But we really don't want to be doing it. But the Australian government's conduct has been appalling. They've attempted to try and say that the actions of a particular person is a rogue minister within their government. But their actions are, they epitomise, they embody the way in which the Israeli society treats Palestinians.
Palestinian prisoners. There's approximately 10,000 people being held hostage by the Israeli state. So we're not surprised that by the treatment that our participants received. We're shocked, but we're not surprised because that's the way in which they conduct themselves. They're brutal thugs and thieves in uniforms, and some of them are brutal thugs and thieves in suits. And the way in which the Australian government has given cover to this behaviour is outrageous, and it's something that we shouldn't stand for, we won't stand for. But it's not unexpected here either. The Australians continue to do it, the Australian government, and the way in which it conducts itself against people here, against First Nations people, against anybody here who speaks up about injustices here, as land's being stolen, whether it's been in preparations for the five-ring circus happening in Muggingen, which happened last night, or whether it's around people who are protecting their land or the water. But how the state here conducts itself is another settler colony. So when they attack nearly 400, 500 people in the last month, the Israelis did, more than 70 boats from 45-plus countries. And these people were in international waters, hundreds of kilometres away from Palestine. Some of them were near Greece, some were near Crete. And so, yeah, that's the way the Australian government does. It doesn't do its job, so we have to do the job that the government should be doing.
Aside from the predictably disappointing response of the government, have you got anything to report about the general responses from the public you've been receiving for your actions?
Yeah, well, it starts off with the number of people who actually want to start sailing on the Freedom Flotilla. So in the past, we've been selecting one or sometimes two people from this continent, but there's just so many people, and now other organisations as well, along with ours, that they ended up being 11 people from Australia sailed. So behind all of these people, and from our group, the Freedom Free Gaza Australia, there were three which we were supporting. But behind all of these people who are participants, there are, of course, networks of their family and friends and communities they're associated with. So the reverberations amongst them are large. But then beyond that, the stories of these people who we select, who have connection with community, are significant too. So the stories which they bring back from their experiences, not just their personal ones, but those they've interacted with other participants and other people as part of the journey as we sailed around different ports in the Mediterranean and then had to stop off in various places on the way to try and challenge the blockade. And then the general support which we get, whether it be in Parliament House the other day where people conducted a protest, or return meetups which people have had, and then just random meetups in the streets with a variety of people which I have when I've got a shirt on or approach people, and people break down and they're very emotional when we talk to them about experiences people have endured. But they're emotional because they know that it's just a glimpse of what thousands of Palestinians are facing every day at the hands of the Israeli regime.
The footage of and the reports from the people who were attacked by the soldiers, the Israelis, this time round, as well as the brazenness of the Israeli minister who was filmed, going around like a rooster crowing over the people. It's very interesting how they spend a lot of time trying to pretend that they're victims and that, you know, they're the good guys, they're the people with the white hats on, and all of a sudden their slip is shown, revealed across the world. It's been a massive success, basically, for the revelation of their monstrosity.
Yeah, this is one of the things which we've been... One of the key focuses of our campaign is around the silence, the media blockade around what happens to Palestinians. And so, as well as... So whilst we've been able to see some of this outrageous footage from aboard the decks of one of these converted former US Navy landing craft, I understand they were, of the way in which people with international passports were being treated. The Israelis routinely when they attack our boats, they cut the communications beforehand. They cut the communications when they get onto the boat. People may have seen footage of them shooting cameras. They cut the comms. They steal all the electronics to try and remove people's evidence of their brutality, of their thuggery and their thieving. And so when they record themselves, as has been done throughout history, is that some of the worst perpetrators of violence, the people who have perpetrated violence, have often recorded what they've done. They've been quite systematic. And so there's evidence galore, but this particular pictorial and audio evidence is important. But it does go alongside the massive amount of pictorial and audio violence which we've had of Palestinians being mass murdered, being ethnically cleansed by the Israeli regime. And so this regime, which is one of it's one of thuggery, and it's one of violence, and it's absolute brutality. And so for a moment, we saw a small glimpse as to the way in which their entire system is one of domination. It's segregation, and it's denying Palestinian rights. And this isn't the abuses of one particular extreme person. This is systematic of the community, of the society, and it's been seen, as you said, the veil's been pulled back from these people. I mean, they've pulled veils off people who were participants on the flotilla, but maybe this has pulled the veil back off the extermination policy which they have in place.
And I had a bit of a different question from that, but what happens to all the boats? Like, now that they're seized, are they just float in the sea? Is there a graveyard of boats just floating in the sea? Or what is the, like, material cost and the logistics of all these campaigns that you guys run?
Yeah, there's a lot there we can talk about. Over the years, in terms of purchasing boats, procuring items, that's complex. What types of boats? Where do we get them from? People donate boats, all sorts of stories we have. Once we've even bought a boat in-house and refurbished it to try and stave it out, the Israelis blew that up. As far as this particular mission, there's a lot of boats, a lot of yachts. The Israelis stole some. They fired water cannon at and drove into the side of one. Some have sunk. Some have been stolen. Others are adrift. Others have landed on shore. And we're behaving as responsible global activists behave. And we'd like to get them back, and we don't like pollution. So we'll do whatever we can in order to recover and restore and reuse the particular boats we've got. Absolutely.
So how do people help out? How do they get in contact with you guys and be useful to this campaign?
Well, one way, as I said, so we campaign on the water, and we'll keep sailing till Palestine is free. We made a pledge to Palestinian people to do that, and we'll keep doing it. So we'll be working towards more flotillas, more people, and we need thousands of boats, of different types of vessels, to overwhelm the regime and break this blockade once and for all. The people, if they want to get involved directly with that or in supporting our mission, these actions, they should either go to our link tree, which is Free Gaza Australia, or you can go to the international website, which is freedomflotilla.org, and we're also on all the platforms of Facebook, X, B-Sky, Instagram. We're Free Gaza Australia on most of them, but the link tree is the best place to go, because you'll find all the different things there, Free Gaza Australia. And as far as other things go, not, you know, sailing isn't for everybody. Absolutely, we need a land team. We need people on land to support the people. But as importantly, we need people to be doing other things. If we're really going to break the blockade, we need to break the media blockade, but we also need to take the actions to the arms factories, to the places that which support this ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people. So we want to support whatever actions are going on by local communities to close down arms factories, whether it's Boeing, Northrop Grumman, BAE Systems, Thales, you name it. There's a lot of places throughout this continent, EOS, which people should be closing down, demanding their money, which they may have in their superannuation funds, are no longer invested in profiting from genocide. People need to take action for boycott. Go to the BDS movement website, boycotts, divestment, sanctions, and take actions on land, sea, and air to break this illegal blockade and stand with our Palestinian siblings.
More strength to your arm, James. Thanks for talking to us this morning.
Hey, absolute honour to be on beautiful community radio. Love you all at 3CR.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Due to unprecedented civil unrest, all forms of protest are now classified as acts of terrorism. This is not a test. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grabber, tyrant by the toe, fucker, fascist, puppet, show, line them up like dominoes. Never bow to a bitch in a toupee, yelling free speech but controlling what the news say. The Lorax called, it's time to find a new shade. RuPaul's never seen a beat that bad on Drag Race. Ain't it obvious the person in the office is a racist? Brad came in the mail, but he opposes immigration. And someone's apple leader, not a foreign armed invasion. That would be the mass man reading graduation ceremonies. Unmarked van snatching people off the street. Broken Amendments 5, 10, and 14, at least. But please tell me again, oh, this is still democracy?
Repeat. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grabber, tyrant by the toe, fucker, fascist, puppet, show, line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grabber, tyrant by the toe, fucker, fascist, puppet, show, line them up like dominoes. Please explain it to me. The man in charge of the economy's got 6 bankruptcies. Huh? Asking ChatGPT to define GDP, defund an education when half the country can't read. Well, now it's clicking for me. You need the people asleep. And knowledge is the greatest threat to propaganda machines. Remember, books don't burn, they just quietly vanish. So don't wait till it's too late to panic. Iceberg, Titanic, threat level orange. Don't you see that they're ignoring our rights? It's fascism wrapped in red, blue, and white. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grabber, tyrant by the toe, fucker, fascist, puppet, show, line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grabber, tyrant by the toe, fucker, fascist, puppet, show, line them up like
dominoes.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange. It's a threat level orange.
The American dream's like any other. Open your eyes and it's gone.
Ciao a tutte e tutti, sono Grazia. You're listening to 3CR. Radical Radio.
Yeah, you are. And we're on Solidarity Breakfast. Yeah, we're with Annie and Tobiah and Anila. And I had a chat with some people about a campaign to keep public transport free because, for 2 months now it's been free. It's to deal with the cost of living crisis that's been caused by a whole lot of things, but it's been tagged to the closing, the American-Israeli war on Iran and the closing of the Straits of Hormuz.
Well, it's like all this business about like how inflation rises, but no one can seem to link it to the drive to war or the investment into war profiteering companies.
Well, that's right. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, Matt and Maeve came in and had a chat with me about how they reckon that we need to get to the hustings and make free public transport a forever deal. Thanks for coming in today, Maya and Matthew. You're leading a free public transport campaign. So first, let's start off with you, Matthew. Can you tell me what inspired you?
Look, I heard about the free public transport. I thought, no, that's pretty interesting. I'm a bike rider and a car driver and occasional public transport user, but I find my wife, she's really good. She has her Mikey ticket. It's always got credit on it. For me, it's just all too hard. I lose them. You know, I end up in a situation where I've got a fare evaded and hop on. I don't feel comfortable doing that. And so there's a lot of friction. I don't use it. And then since the free announcement came along, I managed to use it a few times. It's been very convenient. I felt great. It was easy just to hop on. I really feel the difference. And I noticed so many happy people on the trains and trams, and I noticed they were really full. And I thought, this is great value for money. Even riding my bike, I'm alongside the tram and I'm seeing them full. And I'm thinking, yeah, as a taxpayer paying most of it already out of my taxes, so 87% of it we pay out of our taxes, I'm getting way better value for money, twice the service. I'm getting twice the number of commuters means I'm getting way better value for money. And I see that just that pathetic 13% from collecting tickets is actually hindering people. It's obstructing them. It's stopping them from using public transport. And that's just ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, okay. And how did you get on board, Maya?
Because I'm a public transport user a lot of the time. I use the bus to get to uni, and I also use the tram to get to high school as well. I think the fare system really just needs to go.
It's very expensive, actually. It's interesting to have it noted that it's only 13% of the cost of the running of the system. But for people like you and me, Maya, it's actually a very large burden.
It is, yeah. Even with the student discounts that you can get from, like, the PTV, just the concession card as well, it's still not enough for students. The ones that I've talked to anyway, they've had to work jobs, and even then they still aren't able to afford, the public transport fares.
The other thing that's of interest to me about this kind of thing is that as soon as they decided to get rid of conductors and decided to have inspectors, effectively every citizen was potentially branded as a criminal.
You're sort of moving from help to hinder. You know,
that's right.
It's just absurd. And I can't believe that it's like a toll, it's like a tax to get on and use it. And then you're constantly having to witness them picking on the young people or poor people or people of less advantage. You know, it actually makes the whole thing feel uncomfortable and not great. It actually is an extra friction beyond just tapping on and tapping off, the friction of the feeling of it. Whereas right now, it feels amazing to be part of a trip with everybody, knowing, you know, we're sharing this public infrastructure together, we're all getting good value, we're all happy. Like right now, this is a great feeling. And I've spoken to many people who've felt the same thing as me. And you know, I've only taken maybe a dozen trips. But
so you're saying that it adds to social cohesion, shall I dare to use the term?
And I think people will protect and promote the infrastructure once this happens. So at the moment, you know, but I think everyone will be like, no, this is ours. You look after it as well. You know?
Actually,
and strengthen numbers, you know.
On that theme, I think the most profound feeling of difference is going on the trains, going through those barriers at the Flinders Street with all the people that are there being available to help you to locate which platform you should be on, that sort of stuff. It's actually a much better feeling in the main transport system.
Yeah, and that's the point. They are barriers. And we don't – well, I like to say they're friction. And there's more than a fraction too much friction here. So in a transport system, the last thing we want is friction. Get rid of the friction. No transport system needs friction. And this is the biggest friction in this transport system.
Well, we've had 2 months of no fares because it's supposed to be trying to alleviate the cost of living crisis.
Fuel prices, and obviously Australia is totally an importer of liquid fuels for transport.
That's exactly right.
But taking it off now is crazy. So now we need forever free PT.
Yeah.
And so this is the Forever campaign. So freept.org.au, our campaign is the Forever campaign. Let's make it free forever. Let's get rid of the ticketing infrastructure. There's a great opportunity now not to pay any or just limited compensation to the ticket operator, because you all recall that they changed the company doing the ticketing because they couldn't for the life of them get an iPhone tap on capability. Well, lo and behold, the new companies come on board with their commitment they could do it in 3 months, and the iPhone's tap-on still doesn't work. So I'd say that's a real big, big breach of contract. And so instead of taking $1.7 billion of our money over the next 10 years, I think they're already a year or two into that, end that rubbish, get rid of it. It's waste. We don't want waste. We want efficiency. Get rid of that that $1.7 billion, which is obviously contributing, the whole system that's contributing to people not using the system. And we'll have a way better system for everybody.
So, Maya, you're in charge of the social media campaign. What kind of tactics have been employed to raise awareness of this free transport campaign?
Well, we're trying to get involved with the algorithms, and, you know, as a young person using social media, I know that hashtags have a lot of influence in getting to people's feeds and, you know, especially getting to those who matter. So at the moment, I've just been like looking around for other, I guess, groups or other people who are also pro free public transport and just seeing what they're saying and then applying that to our campaign.
Yeah. Okay. And we just got going in the last few weeks. We did look, I mean, I personally looked around to try and find someone else who's running the same kind of campaign, and I was hoping just to boost them. But we really couldn't find anybody, which was a bit sad, because there's so much support out there, but there doesn't seem to be anyone formed together to really create a front to fight this. So we put that together. Maya's been working on it, so we will be doing a lot of social media shortly. So that's what Maya's working on. This interview's like really at ground zero. We only just started in the last couple of weeks. We've just got thousands of stickers that we're ready to distribute. People can buy those, or if you're super committed and say you'll put them in good, safe, legal spots that you have permission to stick them in, because of course that's what we would support, then we'd be happy to give them to you if you're willing to show that you're going to get them out there. We want everyone everywhere to see the idea, the campaign, Free PT. We hope the campaign will be over soon, because we hope it'll be won. So it's not, may not be a need to be a long-term campaign, and that's my hope. We've got great timing right now. We've had 2 months of it. It's been an absolute success. There's nobody against it, and we're ready to go. I just also wanted to point out that it benefits really just about everybody, except for the ticketing company. If you're a car driver, and I'm a car driver as well, as a businessman, I have to visit customers all over the place, so I'm often on the roads. I'm paying the 87% towards running this transport infrastructure. I find it pretty annoying that stupid ticket system is impeding people from getting out of their car, who are delaying me, getting out of their car and onto the trains and trams. We can free up the roads. It's the cheapest way to free up the roads. And then, therefore, people who can't use trains, trams or buses are getting a benefit when they drive. People who are choosing to drive, for whatever reason, they may still be able to use public transport, they're also getting benefit. So everybody's benefiting. And even if you're a car driver who perhaps has never used public transport before, now that friction's been removed, very easy just to jump on a train, jump on a tram. If you did that 5 times in a year, that would actually, at today's ticketing costs, you'd be ahead versus actually paying 5 times. And you don't have to work out how to pay. You don't have to work out how to get a Mikey or to load something on your phone that doesn't work out or do whatever. You just go and use it 5 times and bang. And there's very little friction. You see a train, go, yeah, I'll hop on that train. You don't have to think any more than that. Yeah, you just have to know it's going to, you know, head towards the city or wherever it's going. So it's a really good opportunity to get your money back. If you're an existing user, you're going to save money. So existing users are going to save money. People who aren't using it can make up the difference by taking 5 trips.
Oh, well, and also people who are disproportionately burdened by the cost of public transport by living out of, in zone 3 or whatever, those people who have to commute will be streets ahead.
Absolutely. Yep. So people who don't have transport routes servicing them very well, most of those people would be driving their vehicles across other routes that are serviced. So that's where they're going to get the benefit. So, you know, you could imagine there'd be a reactionary, grumpy old car driver saying, why am I paying for this? Well, reality check, you're already paying for 87%. Pay for another 13% and you're going to have less cars in your way. So why would you be happy about that?
So, Matthew, how do people get in contact with your group?
I think the best way is through the website freept.org.au, freept.org.au, and there's an opportunity to sign up or email us there, and there'll be a contact number for myself available. And looking for people who maybe want to contribute doing organic campaigning, or they just want to sticker, or that they want to set up local chapters, or you know, we're open to any sort of contributions, meaningful contributions people want to make in the way they want to make them, and of course donations. We'd mostly just buy materials with donations. We're a very, very
egalitarian crew.
Egalitarian too. Running on a shoestring. It's just a simple setup. And like I said, hopefully it's short, it's sharp, it's punchy, and we can win it quickly. And if you want to do some of your own stuff in parallel, obviously there's always politicians to annoy, contact, make yourself heard, all those kind of things.
It's a pretty easy sell, isn't it? Free public transport.
Yeah, it's a great sell. Look, I've found so many people supporting the idea, and where there was a bit of a pushback, there was a concern about the economics and, you know, who's going to pay for it. But you know, it's a piddly pathetic 13%, and there's all this, you know, barriers and poor people getting harassed by ticket inspectors. There's 400 ticket inspectors going around making people fearful. It's just not societally beneficial. It's not great.
You were going to say that there's something on tonight?
PTUA are having a meeting, and the Transport Minister is going to be there. So we're going to head down there, Mayor and I are. We're going to distribute the stickers, make everyone aware of the campaign, and hopefully put some pressure on the Transport Minister. So if you can find where the Transport Minister or the Premier is, then they're good places to be to sort of let them know that Victorians want this. Victorians don't want to be paying a foreign ticket company for a whole lot of wasteful infrastructure that just obstructs our access to the stations. Let's make this a public transport system that benefits all. And the best way to do that, for the best bang for our buck, is to remove the gates, remove the tap on, tap off, and have freedom for movement across Victoria's trams, trains and buses.
There's a fraction too much friction. There's a fraction too much friction. There's a fraction too much friction. Yeah, yeah. There's a fraction too much friction. Take a typical man, hold him with a typical woman, then sit back and watch everything slide. It's a perfectly natural expression of ill will, but when will hostility subside? There's a fraction too much friction. There's a fraction too much friction, yeah. Don't believe in opposing factions. What we need is some positive action. There's a fraction too much friction, yeah.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
3CR's coverage of the Franklin Dam blockade from late 1982 through to March 1983.
One kayak carrying a 16-year-old John Hawkins was taken under the barge and emerged eventually after frightening responses from the other protesters. He emerged with some lacerations and shock. Only evident later.
There's been people underneath. People, there's duckies all over the place. The barge,
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
a weak solidarity, Briggy Team Lister, when we celebrated Reconciliation Week, with the government assuring the Terra Nullius non-land, non-people we would continue to celebrate Reconciliation Week year after year after year. Rest assured, we will make sure we always have to reconcile. Big Supremo Anthony Albanese, rest assured. We don't wish to steal this important week from you by actually reconciling. And thank goodness the Terra Nullius non-land, non-people were too polite to retort, you may as well, you've stolen everything else. Yes, Anthony, we asked Anthony. Since the referendum, what's happened to your promise to adopt the Uluru Statement in full? That promise still stands, but you're doing nothing about it. Of course not. If we did something about it, it would no longer be a promise. Thus, the Terra Nullius non-land, non-people will now have to wait a whole 51 weeks to celebrate again Anthony's promise. But they didn't have to wait an extra minute for the Northern Troubadour Aussie government, building up a commendable record in Terra Nullius non-land, non-people policy, to celebrate Reconciliation Week by announcing no charges would be laid over the death and custody of young Kumajai White. Oh, goody, his family was so pleased for the... forces of law and order. The police are totally innocent. But seriously, listener, did we think for one second anyone would be charged? Meanwhile, the caring business class, Hayseed and Sheepshed Party's coalition proposed a simple solution to the reconciliation issue. There'd be no problem if these people, more correctly, these non-people, went back to where they came from. They looked very smug, even earning a hear-hear from that no-notions, that appalling Hoonsun. After all, they had more important things on their minds, or what passes as, with the iconoclastic socialists smashing the economy to smithereens. Indeed, the Troubadour Aussie Capitalist Review has obviously kept abreast of the disaster by listening to The Week That Was. Story this week summing up what we've been stressing since the budget. The headline, all we need to quote... The real winners out of socialist budget shake-up? Tax lawyers. Yes, that says it all. But to their credit, the poor, battered, bruised and bloody caring business class bravely battled on. The Troubadour Aussie Business Profits Council handing big economic guru Jim Chalmers Capital a huge carving knife as he pulled the lean-looking remains of the economic roast from the corporate oven. We'll all be in ruins, they predicted, unless you carve some particular economic segments out of the new crippling taxes. Which segments? For a start, all of them. Thus far, Jim has resisted the pressure, while Anthony, what a surprise, is waving like an unset jelly in a hurricane, although he's still saying no. But given the socialists' now renowned courage under fire, all we can say is watch this space and let's hope. Although the depth of the tragedy was highlighted this week by Ryan Stacks of Wealth, scion of Kerry Stacks of Wealth, who run their Perth-based $17 billion conglomerate, including Channel Sloven, Ryan, who worked his way up from the womb, warning capital would flee Troubadour Aussie thanks to the socialists. It punishes aspiration, ignores productivity. Thank goodness Ryan and Kerry have the small $17 billion nest egg to fall back on. In fact, the Troubadour Aussie Rich List published yesterday rates Kerry our 12th filthiest rich of the filthy rich, behind 11 other people and families we know and love. But some good news for the Stacks of Wealth clan. Their Western Troubadour Aussie, even richer of the filthy rich Gina, has invested millions into Channel Sloven, with one former director, when she invested heavily in a rival channel, suggesting she will insist on influencing editorial policy. As if. Understated, underopinionated, all humility, Gina. His silly comment based on nothing more substantial than she opted out of the other channel, sold her shares, when the board moved that its editorial staff should be independent. Well, you don't invest in the media to have a report, to have it report dangerous material like the facts. Facts which caught up with poor Big Four bank Worstpac, sprung for what his honour described as grossly negligent, failing clients and run into a bit of financial difficulty. But in fairness for the very best intentions, as Worstpac explained, it was help them or help ourselves, so obviously it was a no-brainer. Armed with that huge carving knife, the socialists have announced primary producers will be exempt from the disastrous initiative and investment-destroying attack on family trusts. So we reckon Gina and Twitty, who have massive investments in just about everything, including vast swathes of pastoral land, will decide they are primarily primary producers. Although, as we've mentioned in Gina's case, the words family and trust don't exactly hang together. We mentioned a couple of weeks ago Twitty destroying sacred sites of the Terra Nullius non-land, non-people he so cares about, fighting them in court for years. Last week, challenging the legality of evil unions signing up the workforce, which just loves him. Well, this week he's running ads telling us how much he cares about the environment. Sacred sites are apparently not part of the environment, but given his record, should we just perhaps be feeling for Mother Earth when it comes to her or Twitty making a financial and environmental killing? The Lord Rupert of Wapping Sin launched the week Monday with an attack on the state socialists. Okay, nothing new there. But Vic ALP slammed after backing release of murderer, then huge print screamed, Labour for terrorists. Yes, the Socialist Conference called for the release of Marwan Barghouti. Convicted Palestinian terrorist, the Wapping Sin informed us. Then quote after quote from Zionist lobby spokespeople condemning this anti-Semitic treachery, a threat to the peace process. Just wish someone would tell us what the peace process is, other than non-stop slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation. No quote putting an alternate view like the tone of the conference debate, nor that important aphorism, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. Not when Lord Rupert and the lobby and Zion know every single non-land, non-person Palestinian is a terrorist. And as Zion continues to seize all the land from the river to the sea, slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation, its puppet, the US of the UN of the US of the world, Big Supremo Donald Trump or the poor, assures us a peace deal, it's never negotiation or agreement, but deal, peace deal with evil Iran is imminent. We are very close. We will bomb them into hell. We are very close. We will bomb them into hell. Showing Donald is right on top of the situation. However, he was upset as he scoffed at that gunman who caused a bit of a panic near the White House, who thought he, the gunman, was the dear baby Jesus. There's only one Jesus, Donald boasted. The greatest Jesus ever, ever. Back here, someone should explain to the independents in Canberra that independent means, wait for it, independent. Once you form a party, you're no longer independent. Independent party, an oxymoron. The only thing it's independent of is independent. To celebrate publication of the filthiest rich of the filthy rich list, a bit of balance. Food Bank reported a huge increase in demand. Parents going hungry to ensure their kids get to eat. A report that there are only 10 electorates where people on the median income can afford to rent. And students from lower income families are falling way behind. See? Balance. Oh, and a real surprise, another report that half the workforce believe they are underpaid. The surprise? But it's not 100%. What are the other half thinking? Then again, the Minister for Caring Business Class Relations, Amanda Rush, not worth much, announced new exciting changes for the unemployed. Major differences like what used to be three streams titled A, B and C are now three streams titled 1, 2 and 3. See? Monumental changes. Thankfully, one monumental change Amanda didn't consider was for the privatised job so-called assistance scheme, which has so worked a treat. But now, listener, news that will make the caviar and lobster and champers and fine reds taste just a little bitter for the filthiest rich upset. The International Court of Justice finally handed down its decision in a long-running case brought by the International Labour Organization. Stand by for the terrible news, listener. It upheld the right to strike, including shame, Court of Justice, shame, secondary boycotts. As a big end of town, caring business class relations lawyer bemoaned, evil unions could use this to challenge Fair Work Trublowazi no longer work choices just looks like it laws. Worse, challenges to injunctions against sympathy and political strikes. Heaven forbid! The only small glimmer of light, glimmer of hope, that proved there was his submission to the international case. The right to strike, the socialists argued, was, quote, not unlimited. And here's the really encouraging bit, and a wider appreciation is warranted for strike restrictions than for other aspects of freedom of association, given the economic impact. Aren't workers lucky having the socialists on their side? Finally, trying to recall the genesis of the Socialist Party, was it formed by evil unions or caring employers? Either way, it's the economy, stupid. Good morning.
We're celebrating 50 years of 3CR on Saturday, the 4th of July at Collingwood Town Hall. There'll be stalls, displays, great food, performances, activities, prizes, and so much more. It's a birthday for us, and we can't wait to celebrate with you. Saturday, the 4th of July, Collingwood Town Hall, 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Bring your family, tell your friends, all are welcome. 3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Let us know you're coming. Go to Humanitix and search for 3CR to RSVP.
You're with us on Solidarity Breakfast. Annie?
Tavia.
And Anila.
Yay for us. I went down to the vigil on Tuesday, the 26th of May, outside the Melbourne Town Hall for people who have died in the street, homeless people, not just general public, but the homeless people who have died alone in the parks and streets of this fair state. And it was preceding the Melbourne City Council's meeting to further their community protection officers program and to double the amount of fellows who are going to be employed to move people on from 11 to 22. Anyway, I collected some material about that event, if you weren't able to turn up, so that we can register what's going on and in our name. We're outside the town hall on the 26th of May, Tuesday, at the vigil for those who have died living on the streets. I'm from 3CR. Do you want to tell me why you came today?
I read about this. Oh, I saw the notice in Green Left Weekly, and I just wanted to pay attention. Who knows? It might be me one day. Soon.
Everybody here tonight on a cold, getting cold, nearly winter's night. First of all, of course, I'd like to acknowledge that we're on the stolen land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respect to their elders past and present. Tonight, it's only going to be a short one because we have to go into the council meeting. It is a sombre occasion because we're here to remember the people that have died while homeless on our streets. As we know, winter's coming and things are only going to get worse. And even walking up here, I stopped and spoke to a couple of homeless people, and it's just heartbreaking to see them there. Now, we're going to have two speakers tonight, and we're also going to have a minute's silence, and then we will go inside, those of us that are going, to attend the meeting where the council's voting on whether or not to double their number of so-called safety officers. We hope they don't. We'd love to see the money spent elsewhere, but I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway, I'd like to invite the first speaker. I'd like to invite Kelly.
Thanks everybody for being here. We really appreciate it. You not going home if you're working, coming straight from work or whatever you've been doing this afternoon, we really appreciate you being here. So tonight the City of Melbourne is voting on whether to double the size of the Community Safety Officer Program from 11 officers to 22 at a total cost of $3.75 million. We've been campaigning for 45 days straight on why this shouldn't happen. So we want to provide you with a short update. 2 weeks ago, the council here released the six-month update of the CSO program. It's meant to be an evaluation of the program, but it's the council's own report card on how the CSO program is going. It's the council reporting on itself. The report has some real problems as far as we're concerned at the Homeless Persons Union. It doesn't say how the program is affecting people experiencing homelessness. This is despite the council claiming that people who are homeless make up a big chunk of who these officers are interacting with. By the council's own figures, nearly one in six of all the interactions officers had were about begging, drinking in public, or sitting or sleeping in the wrong place. Those are exactly the kinds of things that affect people who don't have a home to go to. The report says that feedback from people experiencing homelessness helped shape the program. At the last council meeting here, the manager of this program was asked very directly whether people experiencing homelessness had been spoken to. He admitted they had not. They spoke to support agencies, many who are funded by the City of Melbourne itself, but not to people experiencing homelessness. So when the report says it heard from people with lived experience, that's not actually what happened. The report also doesn't properly address the most serious thing that came out in The Age on April 11th, which kicked off our whole campaign. Joel Owen, a former CSO, told the paper that CSOs had been instructed not to be afraid to use force when telling people to move on, including people who were begging or sleeping against buildings. He also said officers were told not to leave an area until people had moved. So they basically just stand around hovering over people until they move. The council's response is that officers only use force when it's legally required during an arrest. So they also carry handcuffs and can make citizens' arrests. At the last council meeting here, the manager again was asked which laws actually require CSOs to use force. He couldn't name a single one. He said he'd have to go back and look at the training. Let's think about what that means. The person in charge of the CSO program asked in public to explain in which situations officers can use force on members of the community couldn't do it. CSOs are out on the streets right now using force. The senior manager responsible can't tell you which law allows it. If he can't explain it, the officers themselves sure as hell can't either. Lastly, we want to say something about transparency, about the council being clear with the people of Melbourne. The council here is legally required to act compatibly with the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act. This is a Victorian law that says when public authorities make decisions, they have to think about how those decisions affect people's human rights. And if a decision takes someone's human rights away, they have to explain why that's justified. But the council still hasn't published a complete human rights assessment of the CSO program. The one that's public is unfinished, with key sections left blank. At the last council meeting, once again, the manager admitted it wasn't finished and promised a complete version would be put on the City of Melbourne's website. That was almost 2 weeks ago. It still hasn't been published. So what this all means is that tonight, councillors are being asked to double the CSO program at a cost of $3.75 million before the council has published the human rights review it promised. The Homeless Persons Union is asking the City of Melbourne to publish that review, to get an independent evaluation of the program, to properly investigate the use of force allegations, and explain the legal basis and the program's guidance on the use of force. And most importantly, to actually consult with people with lived and living experience of homelessness. Thanks for your support over the last 45 days. Thank you. And here's Spike to kick off the vigil proper. Thanks, Spike.
So, hi. Thank you so much for coming out for three main reasons. One, to show these guys, just to register our protest. That's such a ridiculous program and the funding and such a waste of money that could have gone to provide support services for people that are sleeping rough or people that are homeless. Secondly, to stop for a moment and to remember. So the Guardian reported a couple of weeks ago that 15 people a year are found in our parks and countryside dead, passed away. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare says that's an underestimation, up to 9 people a day who've used a specialist homeless service pass away from a preventable illness, suicide or overdose. That means the $4 million that is spent on security officers could be spent on quarry workers, AAD workers, support workers for people that are sleeping rough or for people that are homeless. The effect of their program pushes people out of the CBD to where they can't be seen, they can't be heard, and to where they experience their lives alone. So can we just stop for a minute to remember those people and just stand in solidarity with them? Thank you so much. Just this last thing, just remember, guys, it's not over. The fact that these guys have passed this budget and passed that proposal, we are going to follow up. We're going to support people who've been moved on, had their belongings confiscated and been intimidated. We're going to follow up every complaint and make sure that these guys are held to account for these human rights abuses. Thank you so much for turning up. Does anyone else want to say something?
All right, everyone. So for those who don't know, I'm Mitch, and this is my husband, Jojo. We've been out in the street since Christmas last year. We had a place out in Melton, and the landlord put a fake eviction notice on our door and sold all our stuff. We had $4,500 worth of stuff at the house, and she called the garbage company, and they come and took it all, and some of that was JJ's mum's sentimental stuff, who's passed away now, so couldn't get that back. And some people turn around and said, oh, you can get that back, but you can't. And we're one of the strongest gay marriage couple in Melbourne to actually, like, recently we could have, like, separated and stuff all through this, but we haven't. Yay! We're stuck through this, like, and that's what people should do. Like, we should rally together and the services and everything, they're doing an amazing job, but I know it's not enough, but, like, well, the police shouldn't be moving people along, and, yeah, so we just all need to stick together and be one big happy family.
We might have to go in now and witness the councillors doing their thing, unfortunately, but we'll keep the mic open. Lainey, would you like to stay here and please just mingle and be here for as long as you like? And thank you all for coming.
What just went down? Tell people.
Council just voted to pass the draft budget, which included doubling the CSO for us. They're going to spend $3.75 million on a program that's not been evaluated properly, has been time and time again told by community that it's going to be ineffective and actually make the situation worse. Council refuses to listen, but we will persist.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious that, like, the mayor continues to yap on about how, like, democratic he thinks Melbourne City Council actually is, when this entire process could not have been more devoid of, like, reciprocity to what people actually care about and what they're actually saying. Like, Melbourne City Council have shown at every opportunity that they, like, it disrespect doesn't quite do their behaviour like justice. Like, it's way worse than that. They just do not care what people actually think. Yeah, and like, I just find it the height of irony that, yeah, the mayor continues. He truly believes it too, that like Melbourne City Council is a democratic institution when it couldn't be anything further from that. Yeah.
Democracy is not about just formal process. It's about people and centering people in that, listening to people. You can point to a million policies and say, look at what we've done. But if the substantive outcome isn't reflecting what the people are telling you, then that's not democracy.
Yeah. And as long as ego remains the center of the Melbourne City Council, this will never change. Honestly.
Rally to save public housing. Over 10,000 residents are set to be displaced, with 6,660 homes to be demolished across 44 public housing towers. All this in an ever-worsening housing crisis. Join us at the State Library of Victoria on Saturday the 30th of May at 11 a.m., and then march to the Atherton Gardens public towers in Fitzroy as we fight to save the towers, people's homes and the communities in and around them. After the rally will be a community festival at the towers. The Victorian Labor Government is determined to demolish and privatise public housing and sell off public land to developers. See you on Saturday 30th of May. Together we can stop this madness. Save Public Housing Collective is a 3CR supporter.
You're back with Annie and Tobiah on Solidarity Breakfast, and Anila will turn up in two shakes of a lamb's tail. And on the line, we've got Senator Lydia Thorpe. And Senator Lydia Thorpe is going to talk to us about the rally to stop the demolition of public housing. You're actually a person who came from public housing, Lydia.
Yes, I did. Came from a really beautiful, supportive, safe community environment where we all looked after one another. I lived in 253 Hoddle Street, high rise. I went to the daycare downstairs at the bottom there, I think is a neighbourhood house now. Played on the basketball courts in the back, went to Collingwood High. Like, it was a thriving community, and I still have those friendships from, you know, way back then.
It's really important, public housing, isn't it?
Well, it's a basic human right. You know, we're in a crisis in this country when it comes to homelessness, housing, cost of living. And I've seen, you know, in the last 20 years, my neighbourhoods that I've always been a part of getting rid of public housing and replacing them with private developers, you know, new formations of housing. I fought for the Northcote Walker Street flat to not be demolished. I used to go to my auntie's in Noon Street, Clifton Hill, after school. Like, it's all gone.
Yeah.
And they promise us a couple of little units here and there, but we know that is not the reality.
It's not just that. It's multi-million dollar apartments to people who can live anywhere.
That's right. And why are they moving people out of the city? What is this really about? Is it about gentrifying the city to move grassroots people out? I think it's absolutely a disgrace, and the Labor government should be ashamed of themselves. There's no such thing as community housing. It's a twist of our words. Public housing. There's no alternative to public housing. Public housing should be in public hands, and we need to be looking after people in this country and selling this land off without consent. By the way, stolen land. There is a treaty going on in this state, so there needs to be a process where traditional owners have free, client informed consent before any Crown land is sold off. And this should be part of this conversation. Because we, you know, we're happy to take the land back and we're happy to look after people like we always do. So I think, you know, Jacinta Allen, you know, she doesn't care about the people, the grassroots communities in this state. She just wants to move everyone out. And I've heard some terrible stories from people, particularly at Walker Street, young people in Year 12 that had to be displaced during their studies. I've heard from non-Aboriginal elders where they've lived in these places for decades and decades and they've created supports around them, next-door neighbours that go to the chemist to get medication, get them a feed when they need it. When you move people away from environments like that, people get sick. So what is the cost-benefit analysis of displacing people who are connected?
The Walker Street estate in particular is just really sends shivers down my spine. That particular place was so beautifully laid out. And when it was first put up, it was put in a location on that sort of nook of the river going up towards High Street Hill. It was built there when nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it, right? And then all of a sudden it becomes something that's a primary location for well-heeled people who want to have a close to the inner city location. And like you said, it had a whole community holding people together in a suburb that is built on community.
That's right. It's, you know, it's a second phase of a land grab, if you like.
Yeah.
Get rid of all the public housing and move people out into areas that don't have the same infrastructure, don't have the same support, and they've lost the people that they've lived next door to or that their kids have played down in the, you know, in the car park with for the last decade or so. So it's completely ripping the heart out of communities and it's dispossessing people and you know, I've heard of anxiety, of depression, of impact to people's lives. It's just devastating.
I just can't get over the fact that the state government can just make an announcement that they're going to knock down these 44 towers. I went past the one down in South Melbourne and it, you know, I was calculating, like, there's about 30 levels. There must be about 10 apartments on each level. That's at least 300 households that are being relocated. This is one tower. Where are these people supposed to go? Like you said, in a housing crisis, it's all too expensive. And it was just mentioned recently that something like there's only 10 medium level locations in Australia where anybody who's renting can actually afford to rent. So, I mean, what is the government's plan, really?
Well, I don't think they have one. I think this is completely not thought through and they haven't looked at the impact on people's lives, people's health. This is displacing, what, over 10,000 residents?
Amazing.
And they're about to destroy almost 7,000 homes.
It's really bizarre.
It's outrageous and she needs to, Jacinta Allen needs to turn the decision around, keep people safe in their homes, keep people well, keep people connected, rather than with a stroke of a pen, absolutely destroy the very essence of what a thriving community looks like.
Thanks for...
She needs to be safe with herself.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She needs to look at herself. Thanks.
And we need to fight this. We need to get on the streets, we need to fight it, and we need to save public housing.
Thanks for talking to us this morning, Lydia.
Thanks for having me.
Rally to save public housing. Over 10,000 residents are set to be displaced, with 6,660 homes to be demolished
across 44 public housing towers. All this in an ever-worsening housing crisis. Join us at the State Library of Victoria on Saturday the 30th of May at 11 a.m. and then march to the Atherton Gardens public towers in Fitzroy as we fight to save the towers, people's homes and the communities in and around them. After the rally will be a community festival at the towers. The Victorian Labor Government is determined to demolish and privatise public housing and sell off public land to developers. See you on Saturday 30th of May. Together we can stop this madness. Save Public Housing Collective is a 3CR supporter.
Come to another end of another show on 3CR, your community radio station.
Annie channeling the frustration that we're all feeling after that discussion of public housing.
It's just so outrageous. So make sure you're there. We're going to fight this. We've been fighting it for quite a long time. And, of course, there's also an alternative. If you can't get to the streets, then go to
Merlinston Progress Hall in 1 Novian Court, Coburg. We'll see you there for the Festa della Repubblica, the celebrating the founding of the Italian Republic and the Constitution.
Don't forget, it's Radiothon, the 13th of June. As I said on a previous program, auspicious or not.
Just you wait what we have in store this year.
Yeah, that's right. And we've got lots of people to ring us up to talk to us about being friends to the station and friends to the show. 50 years, that's a long time.
It's time for a birthday present, I think, from the listeners.
That's exactly right. Coming up next is Asia Pacific Currents, and thank you for your company this morning. We're going to go out with This Land, Charlie Needs Braces.
What nation? What mob? Whose clan? Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donors.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.